City Hall. As we've been doing, we'll start with a roll. This is Rob McFarland.
Commissioner Scott Greenberg.
Commissioner Gary Tao.
Commissioner Dave Ryan.
Thank you very much. We are hoping some other commissioners come, but at this time, others are absent. First order of business on our item is the election of a chair and a vice chair for new two-year terms per the procedures.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
May I move that item be postponed to the next meeting?
Certainly make that motion. Absolutely. Is there a second? I'd like to move that Scott Tao be elected chair.
Scott Tao, that's.
Gary Tao.
And then Gary Greenberg will be vice chair.
That's my brother.
So I'd like to nominate Gary Tao as chair.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? None.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll turn over the gavel.
Oh, well, we don't have to do that right at this moment. You're doing awesome.
All right.
Well, but I do really appreciate the vote of confidence, and we'll do my level best to do a good job for the commission as we go forward. So I appreciate the support.
I'll go one step further then. I'd like to nominate Scott Greenberg as vice chair.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion fully carries. Do you really want me to keep going? Officially, you are the chair, so I really think you should take over.
All right. Well, again, thanks. Scott, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Looking forward to working with our new commissioners and a lot on the plate going forward. So
you are planning of being at all the upcoming meetings for 2 years, right?
every single one. That is my
plan. On your calendar.
Okay. I'll show up every Thursday just in case there's a
special meeting.
Okay, so moving forward with our agenda, the next item is approval of tonight's agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda for tonight's meeting?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of approving tonight's meeting agenda, say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion carries. All right, next item is approval of the minutes from our April 25th Planning Commission meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, now it's time to take comments from the public on any items that are not on tonight's agenda. Sir, are you here to speak on anything in particular?
No.
Okay. Just an observer tonight? Well, welcome.
I was here to speak upon my resignation.
It can't happen fast enough for Canada.
Could you hold
it
till the end?
We enjoyed having you here, just so you know.
Don't go there.
Okay.
All right. Well, the next item then on the agenda is deliberation, possible recommendation of the temporary use regulations. This would be the third time that we've discussed this.
That's what I was thinking.
So this is most recently at our April 25th meeting. So, Lynn, are there any introductory comments that you want to make? I know in the packet you summarized the edits that were made. Commissioner McFarland, you supplied some additional comments, but is there anything by way of background or introduction from you?
Not an introduction, no. I think it's more of a item by item.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chair, may I make a suggest maybe for just briefing for all of us, but maybe.
I'm sure we made it much faster.
Sure.
So Heather.
Heather, a chance to understand what we're talking about, maybe a briefing what we're talking about.
That's a good idea. Lynn,
Lynn, would you do the honors of some context and background?
I'd love to. So the temporary use permits is a section in our code that allows uses to come in that don't have to go through a full development process because they might be a more temporary use by nature, whether they're seasonal, the need is only there for a short amount of time, whether it's construction or somebody's moving. And this is a way that we can help help businesses or property owners have some additional opportunities to either use their property or for businesses to realize kind of a lower barrier entry into some business endeavors. Some of the ones that we've really been focusing on, and this is different than a special event permit. So a special event permit would be one that's a weekend for the block party or the Mount Si Festival. This would be one that's a little bit longer. In the past, it was 45 days that you could have a temporary use. Part of the proposal was to open that up. Part of the proposal is to open that up to 120 days, and that's to acknowledge that there's some seasonal uses, whether it's for the length of our summer duration or a user wants to invest a little bit more and be there for a longer period of time, and that's per calendar year. What this group has done is taken a look at allowing that to be a bit longer, as well as with that providing additional criteria that each temporary use would have to abide by, making sure they're not creating a nuisance for an adjacent property owner, they need to be a use that's compatible, any impacts that they might have. The goal is to minimize any disruption to neighbors or businesses, depending on what the use is and where they're located. The two I think that we spent the most time talking about that this would cover are food trucks and cargo or shipping containers. And the food trucks were previously covered under this but did not have specific regulations to them. So we spent quite a bit of time talking about where do we want those and what does it look like? How do we make sure that it's not taken away from our brick and mortar establishments who have invested into our community and who continue to pay taxes, pay water, kind of play by the development rules. So we want to make sure that we're not taking away from them. The other one that we spent quite a bit of time talking about was storage containers, but shipping containers, kind of crates. And those were previously not addressed at all in our code. And this is the first step to address them. In a temporary nature, we've talked about we'll most likely do another code section that would address them for a long-term nature, but this is the means right now. There's no mention of it in our code, and you see them around town, and this is the means that we're going to start to address them and require that they get permits if they're going to have them, and they are not meeting our current standards, building code, design standards, environmental, floodplain, ensuring they're not in wetlands, buffers, things like that. So we're on the process of starting to try and regulate them, and this is the first step to allow them on a temporary use, but not permanent nature, and then we'll likely open another code section. It's kind of a lot of information, and I think it'll, maybe it was clear, maybe it made sense. I don't think I've ever described anything clear the first time, though, so it probably was still a little bit confusing. But I think as we talk through it, it'll start to make more sense. Since the last meeting, the main changes that we made, other than clarifying some of the statements, was removing the section for food trucks specifically and just allowing them as an allowed use, and removing the conditions that we had specific to them and making sure it applied to all temporary uses. And then we refined the storage containers, as well as made some exemptions for construction yards with an active permit, residential users who are moving, and any storage container, if it were to meet all our standards, if they want to modify it and do something really creative, we'd be happy to have that, I think. Now that question's posed to you. In front of your comments that we got from Scott, as well as from Rob, in the meantime, I printed out the comments as I received them. So, anyone like to add anything else that was not clear?
I'm with you.
I think that was great.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, are we ready to start discussion? And Robert Scott, either of you want to start with your comments?
Well, since my first comment is about two sentences in, maybe that's the place to start. Yeah. Does everyone have a copy of the redline version should be shown. Heather, do you have that as a right?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. So what my comment here is essentially saying, hey, below we're talking about if a temporary use is over 120 days, then it's a type 2. As I read that, then it just occurred to me that really then all we're really saying in A is that a 120-day permit is reviewed as a type 1, and thus the edit. More logic to me. Does that make sense to you guys?
That makes sense. I'm still a little unclear on the calendar year and if an application comes in that would extend into the next calendar year. So is it possible that the actual use could be permitted for greater than 120 days if they used 90 of the 120 in one calendar year and then extended in the next calendar year for another 120?
The way that we have done this, and I think there's a section to it, so I'm going to cruise through while I look, that the calendar, it starts, I would like to find this section before I talk about it. But as my understanding, we do it for, so if you were to apply in June, your permit starts then and it ends the next June. So you could, but that's my understanding of how we have it right now. If we want it to be January to December, we should certainly put in some language that's clearer about that.
Well, because I was trying to see whether there was something that specifically addressed multiple years, but
I think in common usage, we usually think of the calendar years being the date specific, right? This
right.
is calendar year 19,
yeah.
calendar year
yeah.
20,
right.
Which is a little different than what Lynn's describing. But I think what you're really getting at is just from one period to the next, regardless of whether you strip away the year 19, and I'm not sure how you get at that either direction, right? In other words, if it is calendar year 19, I can have 120 days in that year, I can apply and be eligible in 20 for another 120 days. Well, that may indeed start in January, and so effectively I might have 260 continuous days, but it will be over the course of two full years.
Would it be two separate permit applications?
Yes. Unless the CUP.
At that point, it would be two different.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right. That makes sense, right? So I think this reads okay to me as long as we're all interpreting a calendar year, not what you've just
right.
stated.
I think we should clarify that. The section that I was thinking about is not as clear as I thought it was, and I think I was reading it how I was interpreting it.
Where are you, please?
1822.040, which is no short-term F. I'll wait for you guys to get there. 1822.040F. No short-term temporary use shall occupy or operate within the city of North Bend for more than 120 days from date of approval, unless an extension is granted. A day of operation shall mean any or part of any day in which the business is conducted.
Mm-hmm.
So for this, the way that it says from date of approval, that's the way I was reading it, but it's not clear, and we should decide if we want it to be calendar.
Well, and so from the statement that you had made, that does support
right.
what you had said, is that it's from issuance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So do we even need language around a calendar year?
Then we may not. We may not need to say calendar year because that's immaterial given this
right.
paragraph.
So the edit would just simply strike in a calendar year.
Correct.
How would that
I believe there's
type
a
two?
Few locations this is. The to be honest, it's I'm trying to think what the difference is, and it might be easier to stick with the year, to keep it within a year, because then it's easier for staff to track and say everyone needs to come in and apply in January, for example, and then if 2019, and then if 2020 runs around and we haven't gotten any permits and we see a temporary use, we know it doesn't have a permit. It might be easier for staff to track.
I think that would be a lot easier. Because otherwise you're going to get into potential disagreements with applicants about whether they operated. And how are you going to know whether they operated?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess that could happen.
It could happen
however
another way,
you're going to,
right?
But at least you have a hard reset right. December 31st, January 1st.
We're dealing with this right now with our street use permit and our businesses downtown that use the sidewalk. And it would be consistent with that if we had it start where they have to get a new permit each year, which is what we're going to have them do.
And do those fall under right away?
Those fall under a street use permit, correct. In fact, one of your exemptions in here is for seasonal usage of the sidewalk as long as the street use permit's required. And that's just a way that we can condition. You can't have trash, you have to keep ADA access open, things like that.
So I would suggest then that we do strike in a calendar year from 22015A, and then I think we'll need to edit in. No, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm going backwards.
We need to edit in the other section.
I'm glad we worked through that just now. I think that's important.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There was a comment.
Yeah.
So here under 020E, I just was confused the way it was written, and so I rewrote it. And my question to all of you is simply, so is that getting at what you intended, Lynn, I guess, staff-wise?
Mm-hmm.
And does it make sense to the commissioners?
I read it already, and I think that makes it much more clear.
Yes, related, a topic I think is related to this one is the sponsoring business.
Mm-hmm.
That's one that I kind of have trouble with. The way this is written seems pretty straightforward, that an individual operator can come in, or a business could submit an application on behalf of an operator if they wanted, but there's nothing in here that talks about the sponsoring business. That's in a different section, and that I have some conversation
okay.
about that part of it.
Sure.
Okay.
Let's talk about it.
Then my next is under 040A, and this was a question for
right.
staff. So did you look at the, you know, I'm just trying to get a feel
right.
for what are we talking about.
Right. So the question is the 20%, it would potentially preclude some businesses that may have a small parking or are underparked from having a temporary use permit because it would take up too many of their parking stalls. Is that an accurate summation of the
right? And I got that. And so where my head was going, what I was trying to illustrate was to say, well, but let's say you've got several businesses all with four or five parking stalls or none.
Mm-hmm.
Collectively looking to support that, how would that end up applying?
David and I talked through this, and David's feelings, and I agree with him, I see where he's coming from, but just to pass it along, is that, yes, that is what it's doing, and because parking, in particular in our downtown, is such a, there seems to be a perceived and potentially actual, depending on who you are, shortage of parking,
mm-hmm.
and so yes, in fact, we need to be conscious of already these uses can be competing with our brick and mortar, and we want to make sure that we're doing the best that we can to not hurt any brick and mortar establishments while helping temporary uses come through. We don't want it to happen on behalf of a brick and mortar establishment. And because parking's already, there's certainly not as much parking downtown as there would be at the outlet mall, for example. We want to protect that for our businesses. So if they,
I totally get that.
Yeah.
I guess the other thought is I'm wondering, again, I'm not thinking about this business as being an applicant, but I just use it as a convenient example of Pioneer Coffee. They've got a couple spaces there. But does this essentially say, well, where you might have chosen to place it on your property in your parking, you instead will end up sticking it on the street because that does allow this.
Not right there, it doesn't allow it. So they wouldn't be able to have it on the street.
Yeah. Right.
And they, I would say, if the code is written the way it is right now and Pioneer were to come in and we were to have this conversation, I'd say, go talk to the North Bend Theater. Find, you know, that parking spot, that private parking spot between the theater, could you put it there? And we'd have to start to look. The way I'd approach it as staff is we'd look for alternative locations.
Okay. I don't
mini mart across the
street. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not looking to change it. I just wanted to be sure I understood.
That's the way that we, that staff talking about it today, it's intended to work.
Okay.
Gary, you look like you're having some questions.
I've got a few on this section. First, I would propose that we strike the temporary uses not allowed in public stalls, specific to East North Bend Way between Ballarat and Sydney. I think that we already have a provision in the code that allows the staff to withhold approval if they think it's going to cause problems. I think trying to prohibit within a specific location is redundant and could lead to some unintended consequences. I think just leaving the discretion to staff to say, no, that just isn't going to work, I think should be sufficient.
I think it was in response to concerns that had been expressed about the parking along there. I think that's why it's there. I'm not saying that that's a reason, but...
I get the concern. I think the concern is a legitimate concern. I'm not questioning that. I just think that we already allow the staff to...
That discretion
to determine if they can work around the concern. And there may be some creative ways to work around that. If not, we've already got it covered that staff can say no.
I think the concern was, especially in the area, say between Bendigo and Main Street, I think, that block, the parking is fairly thin. It's parallel parking along the street. The lane, the single lane in each direction is also fairly thin. You get a lot of larger trucks going through there. And then there's a median. So I think just spatially it's constrained. I think that was a concern. If you're going to have, most canopies, or let's say it's somebody selling flowers, most canopies are 10 by 10. Well, that 10 foot is barely going to fit into that parallel parking stall. And now you got...
Might not fit into it.
Or might not fit into it.
It'd probably be on the sidewalk.
And then you have the weights for the tent that sometimes hang out a little bit. I would say my opinion is to leave it, and then if we find out that it's stifling temporary uses that we want, then hate to say we can come back and amend that, but maybe that's a way of looking at it. I think there's a safety issue. I get your point where maybe we should leave it up to staff discretion, but I think that's the one area where I think that they're just going to be a problem.
I think it can really, we can approach it either way. And one will be a much stronger way that staff can, someone can come in and we can give very clear direction. Here's clearly what the code states. The other, which is really nice for staff as well as businesses when they come in to have this certainty, because the other route that typically would happen is staff will say, we'll need to discuss it with our legal or our development team, and then, there's a lot of ambiguity for an applicant as well as for staff's discretion. That being said, what you're saying does make sense, and it is nice often because you can't guess every user that's going to come in and every situation, so it is nice to have discretion to work through.
Because this takes that away for that.
It does.
That geography.
It does.
It says
yeah.
that if an owner comes in and has a smaller footprint that actually might work, staff can't say yes.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to end up being me to tip, but I'm going to tip toward keeping the language because I look at a lot of this as this is our first shot, and then we'll learn. And if it, and I think, as Lynn's expressing in this particular case, in a highly charged block plus, that not putting them in that position is favorable.
Fair enough. Okay. So my next comment is around the sponsoring business, and I'm just having a hard time wrapping my mind around a business being a sponsor for one of these temporary uses for public parking spaces.
Sure.
That just doesn't seem to feel right, that one business that may be at one end of that parking section could sponsor a food truck or a flower stand that could be in front of, you know, another business. It just seems like the operators should be able to come in when they want to use public parking spaces. The operators should advocate for their own use and remove the other brick and mortar establishments from the equation. If the brick and mortar establishments want to sponsor a use on their property, that's something different. But I'm struggling. I'm not sure I can agree with allowing a business to sponsor another use in a public parking space. It just doesn't seem to be the right relationship.
A little background on it, and this is probably redundant knowledge, so I'm sorry for that, but I don't remember if we talked about it. That came after discussions with downtown existing businesses, and we had talked about prohibiting one of the routes that this theoretically could have gone is to prohibit temporary uses in our downtown core because we're limited on space and because the concern is that we would be directly impacting our existing brick and mortar establishments. And this came from actually a business owner saying, look, I pay taxes, I pay a water bill, it has a high sewer bill, there's limited parking down here, and the desire was to make it so it was a little, somebody that was already investing into the community would be sponsoring this. The parking that this proposes that they would use would have to be immediately adjacent to it, so Compass could not bring in a temporary use and have it park right in front of, well, I guess they're a bad example, they don't have someone right next to them, but let's say single track couldn't bring one in and have them park right in front of the bakery. The goal is that people feel the prime parking clearly is the one right in front of your door. That's your prime parking. So they would have to be using their prime parking.
And I guess that's where I'm having the philosophical problem. Because the public parking spaces are not there for specific businesses.
Sure.
Right? I mean, all of the parking spaces are available to anybody who wants to park downtown. I don't think that one business should be able to direct the use of one of these temporary operations for a public parking space. I think that's the city's responsibility.
Can I ask? I may not be clear on what you're meaning. I was thinking you were saying you wanted to strip away the requirement that there be a sponsoring business, that in other words, any outside vendor would be able to apply for going into the spot. Did I misunderstand that?
Right now I'm just specifically talking about this section where it says the public parking would be adjacent to the sponsoring business. I think that should be stricken. We should remove that sponsoring business language. amount of parking that public parking that a temporary use can occupy anywhere, mm-hmm. but get the other brick and mortar establishments kind of out of that equation.
So Clea Ellen Bakery could come in. Is it okay? Let me put it this way. In your mind, is it okay for Clea Ellen Bakery to come in, put up a 10x10 tent in a parking space right outside of North Bend Bakery?
I think it's fine for Clea Ellen Bakery to submit an application, and then
they meet all the requirements.
Well, then I think that's okay. That's fine. The alternative is to say North Bend Bakery wants to sponsor, some other temporary use that competes with another
ski
type
shop
of
or
the ski shop or something. And I just mm-hmm. don't think that we should be viewing these applications kind of on their merits and not allowing other businesses to.
Yeah, I get. Okay, I get what you're driving to, but I heard some of that feedback as well from businesses. So I think it is an important aspect that as we're trying this out to say that we want to be very careful about the impact to the brick and mortars. If there's a better way to do it, I'm open to that because I'm sympathetic to what you're speaking to, but I just don't know what that would be right now.
Well, I would propose it's nothing. Let's see if that even becomes a problem and then address it, because what we're trying to do is promote some economic growth and some commercial activity. Mm-hmm. The more we try to get too prescriptive on, it's okay that one of our existing businesses likes this particular business, so we're going to let them, but we're not going to let somebody else because there's no sponsor for it, even though there might be a legitimate use. I think we're going to get in our own way in trying to do what we want to do. I think it's we already limit the amount of time that any of these uses can be in place. Mm-hmm. So there's no obligation to renew a permit. If Clay Allen Bakery got a permit right in front of North Bend Bakery, and we didn't like that, that wasn't working, and we saw it had adverse impacts, and in 120 days, we solved that problem. But if we are trying to be too prescriptive and kind of micromanage what can come in and what can't come in, I think we're going to get in the way of opening up the doors for possibilities. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't want to beat that to death. That's just a concern that I have.
Dick, did you have something?
Yes. Mr. Chair. Commissioners. Why are we spending our time talking about nets? This is not subject for a planning commission. The downtown business want to have this, let them work out themselves. Work out agreements. This is not our business. We have no business talking about putting temporary containers in residential parking lots. We have no business talking about food trucks in somebody's space. It's not our business. This is why I'm leaving the commission. We're talking about subject about this town. We need to be talking about the important things of bringing businesses into this town, attracting viable businesses in here, taking up our empty spaces. Half our town is unoccupied. We need those businesses filled. I'm not talking about where we can put a 10x10 freight umbrella for a taco stand. Come on. God, I just get so tired of this. This is not an issue for us. Shouldn't be anyway. Particularly when this discussion works its way towards a residential community, where we're talking about cargo containers, some packing crate on the front of someone's property affecting the entire neighborhood and the livability there. That's so wrong. And I understand there's some council member who wants to bring this up and talk about it, and maybe he's got some political pressure to do that, but I would say no to that. say no to this. This is not what we should be doing. We should not be talking about packing containers. There's businesses in town to take care of that stuff. Give them the business and encourage people to go there and use their storage spaces. My God. That's so wrong. I'm against this entire ordinance. Big no vote for me all the way down the line. Thanks for hearing me.
Yeah, no, good comments. Thanks.
So I would support making that this paragraph more broad, leaving more discretion, and not having that sponsoring establishment. I agree. If it's not broke, I agree with you. Let the businesses work it out. If it becomes a problem, then actually that's a good problem to have.
Right.
Then we have interest of people coming mm-hmm. in and doing temporary uses, and we're getting some competition, which might be good. So that's just my opinion.
Where's the first occurrence where we say that they need a sponsored organization?
It was in
1822-040A.
Because we have applicant and we've got that sort of thing.
So if we just left it at no more than two public parking spaces may be occupied, does that take the adjacency in the sponsoring?
Just strike immediately adjacent to a sponsoring establishment. Get us to where we need to edit F.
Were we comfortable in the end with the timber uses are not allowed in public parking stalls within the right of way between East North Bend Way on East North Bend Way, Ballarat to Sydney? Did we want to leave that? I know we.
I felt it was important.
Okay. I do too.
Okay.
I'm on 040F where we were talking about calendar year versus not. So what we need to change here is that it's not from date of approval, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So just I would propose that we strike from date of approval.
And then I would also change, the extension was a past code proposal that we had, and it's now a CUP, so I would change that now to unless a CUP is granted. Let's make sure that code section is still going to.
And I think your citation there, 1822.015, should be C, not
C now. B. Right. I would actually... I might just remove that. I don't love it when we cite the code because then this happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I would really strike that.
Well, especially if it's in the same code chapter.
Yeah, we don't need to check. Yeah.
So what you're saying then is blah, 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 120 days unless an extension is granted. You're saying change that to unless a CUP is granted.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
I would propose that we eliminate the rest of that section regarding a day of operation and the consecutive days. I think we've established the 120-day period. I think trying to manage actual days that they operate, like every third Tuesday, starts to become problematic from an oversight and enforcement standpoint.
In the past, how we've done it is, like you said, we actually say, tell us every day you're going to be there. And then what it does do is makes so if we start to feel, because we're not going to be out there counting, but what we might say is it seems like they've been out there a little bit more and we could look and say this date wasn't approved on there. It does, so it could help us manage the 120 days.
But the 120 days, if we just make those consecutive calendar days.
Well, I think the idea is it's not intended to restrict a calendar.
sorry.
To consecutive.
Consecutive,
right.
But
you might have a business, a temporary use that only operates on Fridays and Saturdays, but they do so all year round. So they're going to be operating for 100 days, not even 120 maybe, but it's not a consecutive 120 days. This allows that flexibility.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for explaining that well.
I was looking at it a little differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
my next is page 3, item I. Same thing on that, too.
Oh, right.
So, again, it's just a comment. If you want to go a different way, then, you know, say so, but I just don't think that we've got a code enforcement role in health, and that's what that's talking about.
Actually, item looks like item L. I made the same mistake.
L.
Yeah, sorry.
First L, it's the second L. How about that?
Yeah, the second L. Yeah, my question was if we're going to keep this, then it could be expanded to all temporary uses.
Right.
And I don't think it's so much the health department issues, because our inspectors with the city are not going to inspect health department things. But, for example, if it's a temporary use, whether it's a food truck or somebody selling flowers or something, and it's just junky, it's just more of an aesthetic issue, then I think our inspectors could go out and say, you know what, you gotta contain the garbage and the food wrappers and all that kind of stuff, which may not be the health department's purview.
Yeah, this one, I think your point about making it to all temporary uses, I think, is a good one. It should be. I agree, it should be for all. What I do like about it is it gives us a very strong way to go out and say, and we've seen this like at our block party, for example, that a food truck's been leaking, and it was a food truck, was leaking gray water, basically, into our stormwater. That the Department of Health should be catching that, but they're not out there looking every single day for 120 days out of a year, and that's easy for our code enforcement officer to say.
So let me direct you to page 2030C. Temporary use will not significantly impact public health, safety, convenience, create traffic hazards or congestion, or otherwise interfere with normal conduct and uses. I mean, that's virtually what you're asking about. I just think that other one is written specific about food trucks,
mm-hmm.
and seemed to be more about health determination, is what I say. I think it is general. I think that kind of covers it. Maybe you added something about trash to it, but I think it's covered there.
So eliminate that. It's redundant.
Hate to get into details, but a little bit of trash significantly impacting public health, safety, or convenience? I mean, I don't think that's going to matter that much, but if we strike what's on page 3, does that, mm-hmm. Lynn, do you think that still gives your code enforcement officer enough?
If there's really a problem, we'll find a way for the code enforcement officer to stop it. When we start to talk about it, it is nice if you can just really easily say, here, done, moving on. But if there's a nuisance, if it's an impact to, clean air or water, it'll pretty quickly get pollution.
Okay, I'm fine with eliminating.
So we're striking the second L. You didn't want two L's?
Then my next was 050. I just wanted a confirmation.
Yep, so David's been talking with the operator of the we issue a temporary use permit for the winter shelter, and that's the only one that we have been doing temporary uses for that's even approached us, and they are certainly in support of increasing the allowable days. That's really all this, the only change for them is the allowable days. We did remove something that was, I think, potentially from when they first came in and we sat around and talked about it. We started with the smaller comfort zone and said it had to be in a religious institution or facility, and now we've removed that so it can be at the Slough Grange, which we've been letting them do because we wanted it made sense, so we've been allowing that there. And then the 600, so yes, they're very happy with that part. The question you had about the 600 why not 300 or 1,000? 300 is what by law we need to notify. And the idea was that this is, that we wanted to go above and beyond the 300 because so public has a chance to comment, and we make sure we notify everyone. But we didn't want to notify so many people that we, that people that may not be impacted by it will start to, you know, we be giving comments that they may not even actually have the impact.
So I mean, you know, when I generally am going with a question like that, it's if 300 is good enough for everything else we do, why is this use so different that it needs to be twice as much?
Well, I suppose when it was written, it was decided that this use may have more impacts than other uses would in the community, and that's where the desire for 600 came from, as well as to make sure, we really struggle to make sure that we notify public notice well enough for people to know about uses coming in, and this is just a way to try and make sure that we're getting the notice out.
So a large development is a 300-foot notice, and we think that that has less of an impact on the community than a temporary shelter for homeless.
Well, there's certainly more perceived impacts that come with a homeless shelter that wouldn't come with million-dollar homes, like
that's homelessness. Exactly what I thought. Mr. Chair, I move that it be the statute 300 feet.
Are you making a formal motion, or just want to talk about it?
Well, let's talk about it, but I say it should be 300 statute.
I agree. For the reasons that you've stated.
Yeah, I'm fine with the 300 feet, so we'll just, we've kind of been capturing edits as we go.
I just feel pretty strongly about that one.
I hear that.
Yeah.
and I will say, correct me if I'm wrong, the 300 feet or the 600 feet or whatever number's in there is a minimum.
Yeah. It is a minimum.
So if staff feels like, a winter shelter at the Salal Grange year after year after year probably doesn't require more than 300 feet of notice because everybody, unless you have new people with property owners in the area, everybody's aware of it.
Yeah.
You know, assuming you don't get any complaints about it, it's very long run. Mm-hmm. But if there's something new that happens, staff might say, I think we need to give a larger notice.
Yeah, very well. Yeah.
Plus, when this was written, how many years ago? There probably wasn't a lot of social media. So if a new shelter is proposed, like in a church in the Silver Creek neighborhood or something like that, social media is going to pick up on it like that. And people nowhere near where those shelters are going to be located are going to hear about it. So
I will, just to make sure that there have been complaints anywhere it's been located. Not large numbers, typically one or two. There are complaints, though, no matter where it's located, just to make sure we're all on the same page there. But we agree, we think it is a very necessary use, that it needs to continue operating, and staff's been working, and David's really been a big advocate of making sure that we are allowing it to continue to operate.
Do you have anything more on that section? General question.
Yeah.
Up until this point, and now immediately after this section, really the spirit of the temporary uses have been around commercial activity and economic growth. This is like a public safety related, that's not the correct term, but this is a different type of use than every other one that we've been considering. Does this, and it has much more public process than any of the other uses that are specifically called out here. Is there another type of permit that might be more appropriate, conditional use, or just other administrative processes? It seems like this is sort of forced into this ordinance, and it's a completely different use than any of the other things that we're talking about.
You're right, it does feel like we've switched gears. We don't have currently, and I'm going to speak and think at the same time, which isn't always good, but a conditional use permit would be another option that it could happen. That requires a hearing examiner and would be more cumbersome and costly for the applicant if that's the route we choose to go. This is the only other tool that we have in the city. What I've seen other cities do is they do different levels of temporary use permits, like a type 1, type 2, or type 3. And then, so Seattle's, for example, is clearly they have a lot more uses and a lot more regulated. So they go to type 1, type 2, type 3. Each one's addressed differently, and then that's how they capture different users. Because we're a smaller city, we have, you know, smaller numbers. So this is how we have done it.
I think it's in the right place. I do get that it does read a little differently than the others, but it is a temporary use, and that's the whole thing.
Kind of an abrupt shift from
All right.
Well, and then we get to shipping storage containers, which also is an abrupt.
Entirely through.
Yeah.
Well, I would say if staff, if you look at this when we're done with it, and if you think that this section on interim housing facilities should be moved, like to the end or by cargo containers,
right,
these two separate things together, you're not changing it substantively. You're just changing the
if
order.
If we remove the order and
that's
number.
Usually a city clerk type of thing, anyways.
Or,
that might help.
Yeah.
Because then you're kind of back to allow temporary uses and exemptions. And
right.
It's kind of a weird transition.
Right. Next thing I had was bottom of page 4.
I have something above that. This is real simple. 060C2.
Mm-hmm.
There's a redundancy here. The last sentence of the CED director believes an applicant's using the TUP to circumnavigate the improvements. Mm-hmm. That same sentence is earlier on page 2 and would also apply in this situation.
Right.
I mean, it's just
redundant.
That
sentence.
Yeah. That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Is kind of the reverse. It just kind of struck me that that second sentence talking about noise and loud and shouting is not restricted to a push cart. I mean, I think we typically think about the guy with his cart running down the street yelling, but
with a monkey.
With time, along with Scott's idea of just order, what I would suggest is that staff just move that sentence to the appropriate place that it applies to all. Does that make sense?
Move it to general conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That probably would work.
Brings me to storage containers.
Before we get to storage containers, page 5, item E, the short-term residential use of recreational vehicles. So this is an exemption, correct?
It's not an exemption. It's an allowed.
We're exempting short-term residential use of recreational vehicles subject to those conditions.
Yes.
So we're saying if they meet these conditions, they could exceed the 120 days. Or does item 4 there, does that...
That's interesting. They're exempt. Yeah, no, you're bringing up a good point. They are exempt from obtaining a temporary use approval. It's the short-term residential use for recreational vehicles still is held to the same number of days as a TUP, so this would extend it to 120 days, but they don't have to get the permit, is the way I read this.
So then we would need to know.
Right. And I talked to my code enforcement officer about this because it raised a flag to me that we have this in here.
Yeah.
And he said it has been something that we've chosen to have in here that we do sometimes. It's probably one of his more common code enforcement issues is somebody's living in their RV, and if you go to one section of our code, it says you can't be there for more than 48 hours. And then, so that's kind of the first approach that he takes. But if they want to do it through under this provision, they can say, but we're exempt for the TUP. So we actually have conflicting code sections, is what I'm saying. One says 48 hours and then this one. But his thought was to leave this as is because it gives people, because people use it.
Isn't the 48 hours is about being on a public street? Is it not? Or this is reading to me as being on a private property?
The way we just talked about it, he didn't show me the code provision, so I don't know that one. I'd have to look it up.
I mean, I could have it wrong. I just thought that it was about public.
So the way I read this is if there's an RV on any piece of private property that's in an area designated for parking, somebody could live in their RV. So that
up to 120 days.
Doesn't say that.
Yeah.
Vehicles can be used as a residence for maximum days permitted under a TUP. Four.
So would it be possible?
Subject to
anything's possible.
Well, so this kind of unintended consequences. I mean, is it possible for a church or a business to allow somebody to live in an RV in their parking lot for 6 months? And the TUP is kind of set up on really around business use and days of operation versus calendar. I'm kind of struggling with what the implications of exempting
living
in RVs.
The commercial question, they still need to meet the permitted uses. So the commercial, no, because we don't allow residential and commercial zones.
But is that considered
residential?
An RV, it's a vehicle.
Yeah, I think it's considered a residential. Use. If somebody's living out of it, yes.
Okay.
They'd also have to meet the, I think that the other thing our code enforcement officer would look at is the safety or the public health. You know, what are they doing for water or for their septic?
Well, I guess the question that it feels like you're asking is 120 days too much? I saw 45 struck, 60.
Right.
So is that really, is it simple for you that you're just feeling like it should be much stricter?
Feels like it should be to me.
Yeah.
That it's a different, this is a
I would agree.
Entirely
I
different
agree.
Thing.
Yeah.
So what do you two?
What was there a date in there previously? It's hard to tell with all
45.
It was 45?
It
hasn't been a problem?
No.
I would propose that we leave it at 45. And then I'm assuming if somebody wanted to exceed 45, then they don't meet these requirements, and then they've got to come in for the TUP. They could potentially apply for the TUP, which has its own set of standards. Maybe they can't meet those standards, but I'm at least saying there may be an out for them.
So if I were to go back to vehicle can be used as residence for a maximum of 45 days.
Yeah.
It might be helpful for staff if we added something about for a maximum of 45 days, this can be exceeded through a TUP or through anything longer applicant needs to apply for a permit. So we understand that it's still allowed through the TUP. The exemption is just up to 45 days. Do you feel that's implied? The way that Rod's looking at me.
I think that's implied by the whole statement. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm good with the 45 days. I think that.
You got to talk shipping containers? here's where, Dick, you want this one.
I'm sitting here just to give you guys a quorum, for God's sake.
I'm trying to get you to the end as fast as we can.
What if the vote isn't be 3-1?
We understand.
Get on with it.
But what I wanted to just be clear, because of the statements you made at the last meeting in a little while ago about your opposition to shipping containers on property, there is nothing currently in the code that helps with that, and this is where staff's actually bringing it in to meet your concern. And so you should be supporting this, whereas I'm saying, this doesn't belong here, I don't think we should be doing this. But again, that's just the way I feel, that it's misplaced.
I would simply make it the code, any shipping containers or any other storage facilities outside of the structure are not allowed.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. I get that.
That puts people into the storage business community where they can get some money. I mean, my God.
Yeah. No, I get that. My reaction as I've written it is, now you're entering the private residence property and we're saying what a lot of HOAs do, which is they restrict the look, the size, the type of things that can be there, whether it's a play toy or a shed or whatever. And I totally get that. For the city to be stepping in and saying, we think a shipping container's wrong, but we're not talking to you about this other structure that's every bit as big and ugly, that just didn't feel right to me. And I'm perfectly willing to just let it die at that. I just wanted to raise it to the commissioners to say that it doesn't feel right.
And one comment to what you say is that we're okay with what we put in exemption is if they meet our design standards and our building code, just like that other large, ugly building that theoretically is on this lot that you didn't like, would have had to meet the design standards. So if they do that, they can...
I agree with that, but then my question is, and then where's the slope that says, well, and now we're not going to allow that plastic prefab shed from Costco, but if you meet our design guidelines, then you can have your 6x8 shed. Well, that play toy doesn't meet our design guidelines, so we need you to build one that looks like our vision. That's my point. Where do you stop with that? I get the idea that shipping containers are generally, if they are purely a shipping container, ugly.
If your footprint on the property allows you to build an extension, build the darn thing, have it connected to your house and put your junk in it.
Yeah.
We have a woman that lives right out here outside the town. We all know her. She's a hoarder. Mm-hmm. And you can just see it. It's just utterly dangerous. Lifestyle she has.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You want that around town? You're gonna get it.
Yeah.
Well, this will keep that from happening.
Yeah. So
right now, if this doesn't exist, then there's nothing the staff can do to stop it from happening. This is more protective, right?
Yes. That's correct.
Yeah.
Right. Correct. Right now, there's more protective. We have nothing to point to. So.
So I mean, I've made my point. I don't have anything more to say. If you guys are okay with it, it stays.
I support it for a couple reasons. Number one, because we don't have any protection right now. Mm-hmm. And number two, like I said before, let's try this out.
Yeah.
Let's try it, and if it doesn't seem to be working, then we can come back in and change it. Or tweak it. But right now, we don't really know. It's just something
you can stop it from moving forward, but you can't.
Right.
You can't have the units that were established removed.
Yes, you can, because there is a 120-day time period.
Well, and actually what we have talked about with our attorney is that instead of trying to add a clause to amortize them or some sort of a sunsetting of the non-conforming, is that, in fact, they're not permitted as they are now. They don't meet any of the codes. They're in the floodplains.
Right.
So they are actually, they're in illegal use right now. So one of the ways that we talked about addressing that is to let people know, reach out to people instead of just going straight to, you know, code enforcement and letting them know this is coming your way, potentially saying you have 120 days now or something like that. Start to think about how you can operate your business without depending on these and work with them.
I don't like the businesses that are residential.
Sorry, what was that?
I don't even like the idea of a business in the residential. I already don't.
A business in the residential zone?
You mean like a home business? Or
yeah. Not the, of course, that it's an accessory building to do it.
Yeah.
You got a barber shop in the back bedroom that you're not using flying. But put out a little cargo container and build a little shop in there is
different.
Slippery slope.
Mr. Chair, any other?
Well, grudgingly support it because I'm conflicted between cargo containers for business use, cargo containers for residential use. I think they're different. I do think that that cargo containers are, there's a legitimate ongoing need for extra space that can't be accommodated through brick and mortar expansion. That's extremely costly and probably is not efficient to go use other storage facilities, and you see them all over. Costco uses them. They're all over, small businesses, huge businesses. And so it seems like regulating cargo containers within the commercial space is one set of regulations. Mm-hmm. Cargo containers that are on residential properties are used for entirely different things. Some people use them for jobs, some people use them for storage. There's the pods, which are mentioned in here. And it doesn't feel like the code really gets to the distinction between the two. It seems like the residential piece should be handled through residential zoning and what's used, as opposed to just dealing with it as a temporary use. Because from a business standpoint, even with the residential, the offenders are not temporary. You know, the businesses are using them long-term, mm-hmm. typically. And certainly where we see cargo containers, if it's not a pod on private property, chances are they're using it permanently for whatever reason. So having the temporary use permit doesn't seem to really get to what kind of the underlying problem is. But I do think it's a good start. It puts something in place. But I think that still needs to be more further kind of thought out and drawn out between distinguishing between
right.
commercial and residential use of these cargo containers.
Mr. Chair, can I make a motion?
Yes.
I may not be ready for it, but I think we're at the end of the document.
We are.
Would you like to accept public comment on this? Logan that's here is raising his hand.
Just looking at the 1822.080 section D, the storage containers should not be visible to the motoring public. Any business that has one is going to be visible.
Right. Well, that's kind of what we've been talking about.
Scratch that.
Yeah, good comment. Appreciate the feedback.
Okay.
They can be landscaped. They can be screened.
Right.
That's, I think, the intent.
Yeah. Right. So the if they are visible, then we can start to work with
yes.
them on screening.
So that's, I think, the regulation does get to that
right.
piece of it.
What there was a suggestion to, and we're going to see where the desire lies if we want to open and make a new code section to get really, I think, into what you're looking for. Then that's the Bolton more comprehensive look at cargo containers.
Yeah.
I think this was open, and we really would like to get something in, and it seemed like a good place to start for the temporary use.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move adoption of North Bend Municipal Code Section 18.22 Temporary Use Regulations as amended this evening.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any other conversation before we vote?
Just make the comment that we've had some struggles with this document. I think at least it's an improvement on what was there. It's addressing some new things that were not being addressed, whether or not we were all in full agreement with them. particularly the council committee, which sees this coming at them, will listen to the deliberations too as they consider it.
Good points. And I'll just echo that. I think while I wasn't here at the very beginning of the conversation on this topic, I think it's been refined over each meeting, subsequent meeting. I think it is a good first start, and I think any council reflection or consideration of the minutes of our meeting and what we've discussed would kind of confirm that there's been a lot of deliberation and good give and take and good questions, and that has helped refine it over the last several weeks. So appreciate all the work that's gone into it. All right, moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay. Ryan, nay.
For the record. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So that really concludes all the agenda topics.
Sure. Could I get the floor for a moment?
You absolutely may.
Before he beats me to it, I want to thank Commissioner Ryan for his years of service on this commission and great input to it, even when he's felt that he's been in, you know, disagreement with the general flow. His insight is valuable. As you know, I've been friends with him for many a year, and we've had many a tussle and managed to stay friends throughout that time, and I think he's given us great and valuable time out of the generosity of his heart, and I want to thank you, sir, for
serving. Well, thank you very much for saying that. You know, this kind of does bring the curtain down, not just yet. I've got one more commission to get off of, and then I'm done. But in my years that I've worked in the valley here since the early 80s, it's been the land use realm with Weyerhaeuser, and I think my most valuable contributions are things that are when I come back to live in this valley. And that was when North Bend made the mistake, in my mind, of violating the Growth Management Act by allowing Forester Woods to be rezoned high density rather than 5-acre rural. That pushed Weyerhaeuser off that mountain further. Weyerhaeuser was going to manage that mountain, Rattlesnake I'm talking about. But we found that the neighbors in Forest Ridge were good people. They found our tree farms a source of Christmas trees, whatever they wanted to use, and we couldn't manage the tree farm around them. And so that gave me the go-ahead to find a way to get off that mountain, and we connected with the Trust of Public Lands, and they agreed to negotiation to purchase and hold it for the greenway that was coming. We knew that was coming. And so that was about a 3-year transaction with TPL. They agreed to hold the title until the county and the state could bring up the $4 million that we asked for.
Only $4 million.
Now that had a no logging clause in it.
That gets you 60 acres now.
They were buying the dirt, and they're allowed to manage it for fire protection services and things like that, but it can't be logged for commercial purposes. And when the greenway materialized, that actually started the greenway to actually have some teeth. I transferred the rest of our land off of Mount Side to enlarge the conservation area. With a lot of things to help the greenway grow in terms of getting out of the way. I could see it. I come from a highly urbanized area in LA from my youth, and so I could see this happening, and I found a way that I could manage keeping that land from just being logged and turned into an eyesore when it should never have been. It's been logged before. We don't know that, but it was logged at the turn of the century. So those trees aren't old growth up there. They're just old. And so that's that story. But I have a chance to work on this commission. I helped write the Stokely Valley Development Plan. Hmm. The Growth Management Act was established. We established all the areas around from Duval down to here where the was going to go, where the farm was going to go. That was a 20-person commission for 4 years working out of Fall City. And I was always on the losing end of every vote, except when it came to keeping that mill. You know, there was ideas about that mill. The county had laid the framework for having that mill go away, and we got that reversed. I mean, they wanted that rezoned to 5 acre, the mill site to 5 acre. They wanted to remove the commercial, and it's outside the city. So Rosa never joined the city because they didn't want that property influenced by a city zoning. So Virginia Sweetland and others, you remember these names, they gave me a 16-0 vote in favor of keeping that commercial, industrial commercial. So we kept that mill zone properly. Proud of that. I'm currently chair of the King Conservation District, and this is a countywide organization that I'm very, very proud of what we do. It's all deals with private landowners and helping them maintain their conservation ethics on their own property. We're not a regulator. We just basically make money available and sources available to help people improve their farms and whatever they need to have done over there. So that, I turn this up on that in about 2 more months. And then I'm free to travel. But at 77, I'm cutting myself loose. But I've enjoyed being on the planning commission side of it because this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where all this big county stuff planning comes right down to rooms like this, where people in these rooms are speaking from the knowledge they have, from the heart that helps this community stays what it is. And I just, so I'm so against this container thing, it just turns my stomach because I see what comes after that. When it comes after that, it doesn't make me feel good at all, but it'll work itself out. I got a beautiful home on the river. We're not going to leave there. I'm going to have my ashes scattered around a rattlesnake, and Marcia's probably going to go with me. But so I'm not leaving the valley, but I'm leaving the commission because I did want to re-up. I've had 8 years. It's been plenty good, but there's a lot. I'm so glad to see people like you coming on board. All of you guys are strong. Rob, you've been in the wars before. I think you have a brighter future ahead of you for the town. I look forward to that coming to fruition, too. So I'm glad I was on the commission. Very happy that Ken appointed me, and the council agreed, and here I am, and now I'm going.
Good. Well, I would just like to offer personal thanks and appreciation as in just concluding my first year on the commission. Rob, I think, spoke really eloquently about all of your history of service to the commission and to the community. But just in the year that we worked together, I've learned a tremendous amount. I hang on your every word. I really appreciated your historical perspective, the context that you set, and the insights that you've provided. So I've enjoyed working with you. Sorry to see you go, because we're losing a great deal of knowledge and experience and wisdom. Happy for you and your future.
Thank you, but for where I'm sitting, Scott brings a lot more on board than I had when I started. So this commission's got a long ways to go with Scott.
I echo what you said. I mean, I've only been in the Valley for a little more than 4 years and don't really have a good sense of history. And that's what I appreciate you bringing to a lot of our conversations, is that history and how things were and why things are the way they are today. That helps me.
Got to be 60% of the population don't remember before Forester Woods.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. That's the way things change. So.
Turned out Forester Woods became a beautiful community for the city.
Yeah.
But at the time, the city actually put the county in jeopardy because that made every other 5 acre zone property next to an incorporated city line a target. Version, which right behind that 5 acre zone was a forest zone. So right down the line from Duval down to Enumclaw, everybody had to take a second look at what they had because of what North Bend was able to accomplish with that rezoning.
Well, I particularly appreciate your comments about GMA through that lens and the preservation of the hillsides around us, because I think that is one of the biggest challenges we have as a city, is how do we grow responsibly so that we keep what's left green. You know?
And that's why I did what I could to protect Rattlesnake, because that wouldn't have happened. It would have been disastrous. And I come from a town that, seeing that, I knew what had to be done. Yeah. Thankfully, we had a 20-year harvest plan on that mountain. We had to get unfold that sometime.
Could be.
In fact, I offered to exchange it to the state. This was really early in the games. I asked, you know, we knew we should log it, but, you know, we're a corporation. We have a profit motive in mind. But if I could exchange out of it to the state would do right by it. No. They weren't interested in taking it, although, you know, they understood. Mm-hmm. But they saw the dangers of that mountain being under their control. At that time, the Lands Commission was running for state senator. What is his name?
You mean Slate?
No.
State senator or U.S. senator?
U.S. senator. What was his name? See, you forget these guys.
Yeah.
But he helped create the Greenway Trail. He walked the trail. Once all these politicians started walking the Greenway Trail, that they hung their shoulders on that walk, and all of a sudden, that mountain became no touch, and nobody wanted to exchange onto it. So guess what I did? I logged the first three sections. You can see that there are arches on the mountain, much younger trees. That convinced everybody that they had to buy that thing, because we did have the right to log it. We didn't. It was strictly in a corporate sense. We had the right, legal right to log it. But nobody thought we would, because we're a warehouser. You know, why would we do that? So we made our point that we could log it. We did. We logged the most insensitive places. They were very easy to grow back. They're all very healthy right now, third growth timber. But that shook them up, because they were basically working on our good graces. We couldn't manage that long term. So we had to find a way to get them to do it. TPL saw it, they brought forth the money, and we did it. So I won't say I wore a black hat, but I kind of wore a gray hat.
Yeah, you made the point. So before we wrap up, you know, he's not here, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't also acknowledge Chair Scott Heller for his service and his leadership and his role as commissioner and chair. And sorry he's not here tonight. I think maybe he did that on purpose to avoid said recognition. Yeah. But
he's a great guy. He's my neighbor.
Is he? Yeah. As with Dick, I've really enjoyed working with Scott this last year, and really appreciated just his steady hand as chair, and how he facilitated our dialogue and all the work that he put into it. So he'll be missed as well, but happy for him. So, Lynn, I'm not sure who will transcribe the minutes from tonight. Sometimes they get pretty summarized, but I would request that the minutes definitely reflect the conversation around Chairman Ryan, or Commissioner Ryan, and Commissioner Heller, so that we have a record there.
That's a great point, and taken and noted.
All right, appreciate that.
With that, I'll move to adjourn.
Second.
And moved and seconded to adjourn tonight's meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed, we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks for your work. Heather, thanks for joining.
Yeah.